Hey everybody, what's up? It's Chase. Welcome to another episode of the show. Today's micro show is for you. That's right. Well, I mean, they're all for you, really. But this one, for some reason, I woke up and was like, you know what? How many dream killers, how many doubters are there out there? How much headwind are we all facing? And the answer is a lot. Even if you've done such a good job of pruning the bonsai that is your group of friends or peers or people at work, the truth is that there are doubters. There are people who don't understand, who do not understand your dream, or maybe are actively trying to sabotage you. I mean, I hate to think about the world out there to get me, but the reality is that there are headwinds. And, you know, early on in my career towards what I would consider a dream life, and it's hard for me to say that, but it's true. I had another one of those days yesterday. I was thinking, man, how cool is it to get to do this? How lucky am I? You know, gratitude practice, all that stuff. But early on in the journey toward the life that I'm living right now, and this is not to say that I don't have hard days and that bad shit doesn't happen. All that is true. And yet, at some point a while ago, I began to summon the courage to privately share my ambitions of trading in the career that was expected of me when I was a younger person for a life that I truly wanted to live. The noise from what I call the cheap seats got loud really quick. You know, Brene Brown talks about the man in the arena, which is a favorite Roosevelt quote. It talks about, you know, you're either, you know, in the arena or you're in the seats, and you got to decide who you pay attention to. Are you in the arena? If so, I respect other people who are in the arena, but I don't respect people like we're talking about now that were, say, in the cheap seats. So there were so many early on in my career, there's so many what I called self-appointed career counselors, right? And to be fair, what's difficult is these are practical friends, right? And I use that in air quotes. These are practical friends. There are some family members that are maybe more conservative. And the reality is that they grew up in an era where what you want to do didn't even exist, but yet they are not shy with voicing their opinion. And then there's all the other usual suspects, right? The friends that you get, that friend from high school that sort of doesn't want to grow and doesn't want other people to grow with them, or even if they don't say that that's what they mean, I'll just call them the other usual suspects, right? A lot of these people all pipe up with the goal of talking us out of our dreams for one reason or another. Sometimes it's because they care deeply about you, right? They fear for you, so they don't want you to do something fearful. You know, they're like, you want to what? Well, you know, once I knew a guy who tried to make a fill in the blank dream career here. And then when he tried to go for his dream, you know, it basically wrecked his life because fill in, you know, exaggerated bullshit tale here, et cetera. You've heard this, right? You know what I'm talking about. But this is where I want to bring a certain awareness to you today in this show that so many of these things have in common, which is the people who try and talk you out of living your dreams were the people who gave up on theirs. That's right. I'll say it again. The people who are trying to talk you out of living your dreams were most likely the people who had given up on theirs. So I've been texting a little bit with my community, those in my community app, about this. And, you know, I have received some questions. I'm working on a new book, as you all know. These ideas are in there. How do we navigate these dream killers and the naysayers? So I thought for today's show, I would reference a few other videos, previous aspects or previous shows, other YouTube clips that I have created with friends, co-conspirators, colleagues, etc. Friends like Brene Brown, Gary Vaynerchuk, Tom Bilyeu, and L. Luna, to name four specifically. So I want to share with you now four clips from conversations I've had with these folks that are, I think most of them are public, some are private, but I think most of them are public. And I want you to enjoy this, because this idea of not letting other people who've given up on their dreams talk you out of yours, very, very powerful concept. Let's hear now from Brene Brown in this really brilliant clip. Check it out.
When you stop caring what anyone thinks at all, when we don't care at all what people think, we lose our capacity for connection.
Got it.
Which, what is art if it's not connection and love, right?
Yep.
So when we stop caring at all what people think, we lose our ability to connect. When we're defined by what people think, we lose the courage to be vulnerable. So what is so important, I think, for all of us, and not just creatives, but all of us. So what I do, what I recommend to people is you get a very small piece of paper. I suggest 1 inch by 1 inch. And I mean, that's small, right? How small is that? Like that?
Yep.
Yeah, small. And on that piece of paper, you put the names of people whose opinions actually matter to you. And so I carry my list with me. I have I carry it in my wallet. And on it are the people whose opinions of me really, really matter. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There's 8 names on my little piece of paper. And I'll tell you why it's really helpful. It's helpful because, so when I'm walking my tightrope of, I do care what people think, but I don't want to be defined by it. So there are people whose opinions of me matter.
For sure.
So these, the people on my list, and the people who I think should be on everyone's list, are the people who love you, not despite your vulnerability and imperfections, but because of your vulnerability and imperfections.
I just love that from Brené. So, so wise. And it's just, that just is so sticky. It sticks with me all the time. I can't unhear Brené in my ears. So powerful. Also powerful is my man, Gary V. Gary V has, as you know, he's a very outspoken internet personality, and it's really interesting to hear him talk about how emotional intelligence has helped him succeed in life and business. This is sort of, again, navigating people who are, you know, positive, neutral, negative in your life. What can you bring? How can you show up with a certain kind of candor in the world? So here is Mr. Gary V.
I appreciate it. I'm really proud of it. Like I really, you know, for everybody listening, I created these scenarios because that's where everything comes from. I'm more of a listener than I'm a talker, which always, you know, makes people laugh or freak out or disagree. But I always remind them, I'm like, you only see the content I put out and post-produce very effectively. Like most of my day is the consumption of information. And a lot of the scenarios are baked in the, at this point, hundreds of thousands, if not even millions of DMs, emails that I've received over the last 15 years of this journey. And, you know, there's just some really complicated stuff out there, right? Like stay-at-home mom or dad who still has a lot of fire in their belly and like, what do you do here? And like just all sorts of fun stuff that I went through. And, you know, I really talk about accountability. Curiosity was a fun one for me to explore. You know, I structured the book out of these 13 ingredients that I think really give somebody a real shot in the business world. And it's a life book in that way too. Mm-hmm. I called it 12 and a half because this one really caught a lot of people off guard. Gary V, the character, the public domain speaker and pontificator and content creator, very good at candor. Too good. Gary Vaynerchuk, the CEO and human, very bad at it. That's why I called it 12 and a half. And I called it kind candor, my journey to making kind candor a half from a zero was because I started calling it kind candor instead of candor. Cause I saw, back to your point, I saw candor for a long time as an excuse to be mean. I saw candor as something that often created fear. But what I didn't have yet was the maturity to understand the vessel that candor was being delivered in was the vulnerability. You know, my father was rough with his candor delivery. A lot of managers that were in that store were. Many people I came across in business in the 90s and 2000s were. The candor wasn't the problem. The vessel that was delivering the candor wasn't kind, wasn't empathetic. But now that I've got a better sense that of that separation, and then I was very self-reflective. All the things that weren't working for me always pointed back. To lack of candor.
That's like the wise Gary V right there. Wasn't that really, really heartfelt and earnest answer? I enjoyed that conversation a lot. And then there's this conversation I've had with Tom Bilyeu on the power of repetition to drown out negative self-talk. This is when the world is sort of piling their stuff on us, we can sort of start to talk negatively about ourselves to ourselves. So Tom has a really interesting antidote to that.
Well, the first thing is get really good at having phrases and mantras that you can repeat. So I think that repetition is the most underutilized superpower that we have. And it sounds so dumb that people don't realize, no. What the brain is looking for are things that happen over and over, and it goes, oh, those are the repeated things, I'm gonna hardwire those. So the mere act of repetition is exactly what triggers all the things that I just talked about. So doing things like saying, I can learn anything I set my mind to without exception. Like, even though I know that's a lie, like there are clearly limits, it just doesn't do me any good to focus on where the limits are. Like, I'll worry about that if I actually end up running into them.
Yeah, you're like, but for, wait a minute, I can fly. This is so boring now.
Right, yeah. So if I get there, yeah, then I'll really worry. So the phrases that you repeat that are just empowering beliefs, I actually ended up writing them down to give to my employees. I wrote down the 25 beliefs that I had to come to internalize, repeat to myself over and over and over to go from the employee with his head down to an entrepreneur that built a $1 billion business. Anybody can do it. You have to meet minimum requirements, but if you're watching this show,
you
meet minimum requirements, I assure you. So then it just becomes about putting in the reps and doing the work.
I just love that notion from Tom as well, right? Our neurology is primed for these things. And if we can give it what it wants, i.e. repetition, as simple as that sounds, that actually is the thing that will embed it in us, that it goes to our default system rather than something we have to be so actively fighting against, right? How do we have a mantra that outweighs all the stuff that's getting piled us on by culture? Brilliant from Tom. And now I'd like to turn our attention to L. Luna. Elle is just a brilliant creative and a lovely human. You may be familiar with her. She's been on the show before. She's part of the 30 Days of Genius. And in this clip, she talks about the significance of the project, the significance of creating every day. I'm going to introduce her, and I can't wait for you to hear what she says. So smart.
What was it then that allowed you to wake up in that art studio and say, I want to do this forever? Because right now I'm just thinking about the people who are listening. There's a lot of folks who, for whom some, they have a side hustle or a creative gift that they're curious about, or they're at sort of level one and they want to go to 10, or they're level zero and they want to like embrace this. And so I think you and your story are helpful for them. So with knowing who's listening right now or who's watching, what would you tell those people?
Oh, well, I don't have any advice necessarily, but I can tell what worked for me.
Okay, do that.
I started doing the 100 Day Project.
Amazing. Let's give a little backstory on the 100 Day Project.
So the 100 Day Project is this project that Michael Beirut, the amazing, brilliant designer, lecturer, author, everythinger, Michael Beirut started at Yale. And it was a part, he was a faculty in the MFA program.
Masters of Fine Arts, for those who don't know the lingo.
And it was to make something every day for 100 days, but you have to repeat the same thing. So one guy danced in public for 10 seconds every day. Somebody else, drew like a doodle a day, or another person made a poster in 5 minutes every day. So you do one thing repeatedly. And he did this class at Yale. I applied to Yale so that I could take his class. And I didn't get into Yale. It's a really, really top school. And I didn't get into Yale. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to do the 100 Day Project. 7 years later, I'm walking down a dusty road in Mexico, and it dawned on me. I could just do the 100 Day Project. Who knows what I was even thinking? I'd probably just like had a delicious, meal and a margarita. And I was like, I can do the 100 Day Project.
I don't have to go to Yale.
I don't have to go to Yale to do it. So at dinner that night, I was with some friends. I said, would anyone want to do 100 days of making as a practice? And we could do it together in community. Because, to do it by yourself is hard.
Yeah.
And to do it in community and have some accountability and people cheering each other on and doing it together. Wouldn't that be great? And the answer was yes. Everybody there at the dinner wanted to do it. So we all posted on our Instagrams, we're going to start in 1 week. Here are the rules. If you want to play, you can start. And now we are in our fifth year.
So you do it for 100 days and you've done that. This is your fifth time. And we're in the middle of it right now.
Yes, we're on days 38.
Okay. Day 38.
This is about when I'm thoroughly out of good ideas. And I like to say the project actually starts.
That's when it gets real.
Yeah, yeah. So we're in our fifth 100 Day Project. It's a free and open project. I think of it as one of the greatest kind of mischievous projects, because basically people, instead of being on all of their social media accounts or like the mindless flipping that we all do, that I do, it gives you a chance to reclaim your time.
Reclaiming my time.
Reclaiming my time.
I love that. I love that.
Reclaiming my time. Yes. And it allows you also to see what's going on in here.
Yeah.
What's happening? Do I want to meet a new stranger every day for 100 days? Do I want to learn how to cook vegan food for my daughters who are suddenly vegan? Do I want to, you know, what do I want to do? And it gives you a chance to begin slightly seeing the world in a new way. And some of my favorite stories are, there's this one woman in St. Louis. Her Instagram bio said, wannabe artist for real mom of two. Her name's Hillary. She started the 100 Day Project, and her Instagram account went from like photos of her at soccer games with her two really cute boys to these amazing subversive cross-stitch pieces, one a day for 100 days.
Wow.
And at the end of 100 days, I wrote her and I was like, Hillary.
This is crazy.
You can update your Instagram bio. You're no longer a wannabe artist. And it's this amazing thing. How scary it is to say, I'm an artist. I make art. Have you ever said I'm an artist?
All the time.
You do?
Yeah, and to me that was a huge piece of actually shifting gears and embracing the side of me that I was mentioning earlier, had repressed. And, you know, maybe it was for good reason, maybe it was for a terrible reason. I do look at that, I think regret is a horrible thing, and I do look at that time in my life as something that was really, that is very powerful for me now, because I never want to regret, and I do regret sort of not doing it, when not calling myself creative or not calling myself an artist. Ironically, it was skateboard culture that allowed me to see that there could be a fusion between sort of action and activity and being an athletic and being wildly creative, because I think it's a really, that community was where I first really saw it exemplified.
Yeah.
But, you know, early on when I decided to shift gears and call myself an artist, it was one of the things that I now prescribe, because words matter. Naming is a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And even just thinking about that humans are hardwired for language, and that's why brands and, you know, advertising words matter, because we have an emotional connection to this thing that we all speak, this language. And calling yourself an artist, there's something that clicks in your brain. And when you call yourself a creator, call yourself whatever the moniker that you choose is. So yes, I call myself an artist, and I prescribe it as a step in the process. Your 100-day project is absolutely incredible. The fact that you're 5 years in is amazing.
500 days.
That's 500 days of making this crazy.
Isn't that wild? People in over 65 countries.
Yeah, so if people want to check it out, just a little bit, like, what's the coordinates that we would give them for that?
Hashtag the100dayproject.
Got it. And it's just making, and the hashtag is the community.
Yep.
And you can...
And we just pick a day every year. Nobody owns it. There's splinter groups. There's people who are, like, you know, against the 100-day project. So they're like, you know, they have their own 100 days of project. I don't know. But cool, like it just, it's an art project. It gets to be whatever it wants to be.
How amazing is Elle, right? So there's this beautiful, calm wisdom, and yet there's a fierce creator in there. If you know her, or if you've read her book, or paid attention to that podcast, that's a great podcast. Just Google my name and hers. She's just this wonderful balance of, you know, calm and collected and fierce. And you can hear it in her voice, and her work is so good. This idea of practicing essentially every day, making something every day, it's very, very difficult to be in the process of making every day and to have that those outside influences, have the haters or whatever, impact us. Because it's this idea of crowding out, right? If you're busy making, it's so hard to pay attention to all that external noise. Okay, so I hope today's micro show has been helpful. Again, the people who are trying to talk you out of living your dreams are likely the ones who have given up on theirs. Do not succumb to that. I just want you to go out and be your best self, to overcome the doubters and the dream killers, which you are more than capable of doing. So this week, today, tomorrow, this month, from here forward, hope you've got a little extra ammunition, and I hope you have a great day. Go get them. All right. Hey, before you go, thanks so much for listening. And if you got value from this show, chances are your community will too, right? In the particular lies the universal. Please share this link to the show with a friend or mention the show on social. That is a huge benefit for us and hopefully in exchange for providing value to you. I want you to know that I really appreciate your time, the attention, anything that you give to the show, and the questions that you ask our guests, either on social media or through my text community. All that is pure gold. This community, like any community, is a testament to that old phrase, a rising tide floats all boats. And by elevating one another, by sharing and resharing this show, the tidbits that you learn and the experiences you take away, all of that has a collective, massive, positive impact on the world. So, just a quick thank you. I appreciate all the effort you put into sharing for this show. All right, that's a wrap. Let's put today's episode into practice and get back to growing together.